Very special episode today. I'm joined by Leonard Copeland, NBL legend. Pretty exciting for me. Let's see how we go. This is Fantasy Basketball International. This is Balls Deep.
I'm the type to get shit done. You're the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Got something loud in the blunt, yeah. I don't say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny and tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy.
Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast, brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. I'm your host, Adam King, at AdamKing91 on Twitter is where you can find me. As I said, very special episode for me today. I'm going to bring him straight in. Leonard Copeland, NBL legend, someone I grew up watching. I live in Canberra, and so I was around when the Cannons were here. I was usually at their games. We went to basically all of their games. So I remember you coming here with the Melbourne Tigers and usually winning. Cannons weren't a hugely successful team. I mean, we had our moments, but we were linked up through Matty G, who I think you had something to do with previously. Mm. And I just thought it'd be really exciting to get you on and talk about not only sort of media side of things, but also just your journey to getting here from America. So you were obviously born in America. You played college, some NBA. So I guess let's just start at the beginning. And how was it that you got into playing basketball as a young kid?
You know, before we get started, I just watched a YouTube clip of me playing against my first game. Yeah. Was against the Canberra Cannons, Steve. Yeah. Hood, Phil Smythe, and those. Yeah. Guys. And Andrew was away, and we played at the tennis center, the big Rod Laver Arena.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I had 37 points. It was my debut, and I just watched that last night. So it's interesting you brought up Canberra. That's funny. Canberra was always a fun place to play, but the way I got into basketball for me, it was unconventional, because I loved to play sport. I was all about football and baseball and basketball, and I rode a skateboard. I lived in a neighborhood with a heap of kids, bunch of kids everywhere, and we had this big park down the street from my house. So we'd all end up after school at the park. It'd be baseball, softball sometimes. Yeah. You know, I'd ride my skateboard down there. We had a one court with a shed on top of it, and we'd play there. So I was sort of an all-arounder. I just loved everything. I wanted to play football. I wanted to be a quarterback, you know. And luckily enough, I used to ride my skateboard, and there was this massive hill. And I'd ride it down the hill, and I'd always push it back up. And I'd always ride it back up, not knowing that one day that was probably going to help me with my athletic ability, my jump.
Yeah.
And, you know, started playing the game. And in high school, like, my brothers and sisters all went to the same high school. And we had this big mantelpiece. And for Thanksgiving, you know, all the family would come over, cousins or whatever would come over. My mom would cook. And the mantelpiece, there were trophies everywhere. My brothers played football and basketball. Another brother played football. My sister was a cheerleader. Another sister was a track star. So all these trophies on the mantelpiece, and I had nothing. I'm the youngest of six, and there was nothing there. And my brother closest to me would always tease me, when you're going to put something on the mantelpiece? When you're going to get something on the mantelpiece? And so my junior year in high school, I said, I got to do something. Yeah. And I was slim. I was shorter. I said, I want to play basketball. I want to play football. I tried out for the basketball team and got cut. And I really wasn't good enough. I mean, people say, well, how did you get cut and made the NBA? I wasn't good enough. That's the truth.
Yeah.
And played football for a year or two. Didn't play a lot. Ran cross-country track. And my senior year, I started to grow a little bit. Uh-huh. And I remember standing in my mom's room, and she goes, your pants are getting short. I just bought you a new pair of pants last week, and they're getting short already. So I was growing.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. Everyone asking me, are you playing basketball? Are you growing? Are you getting taller? I tried out again my senior year, me and a couple of other guys that I hung out with. Nothing. They cut us. But the team was a very good team. I think they went to the state championship or whatever, and so they were a good team. And then we all graduated from high school, and not knowing what I wanted to be or who I wanted to be or where I wanted to lead myself to, we all got a job at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, a newspaper plant, the biggest in Atlanta. So it's six or seven of us. And it's just like we're in high school because we go to work together, mess around together in the hallways, you know, get in trouble. And it was funny how we all had these blue uniforms on. And it said Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and it said your name, Copeland, L. Copeland.
Yeah.
And so we'd come in at 7 o'clock in the morning, and it's from 7 to 3. But we get there at 6:30, and the older gentlemen who worked late night would come in. They had their own uniforms as well. But it was all these older guys with gray hair, and they were tired, and they always come in the locker room and change. And I'm sitting in that locker room. I'd worked there 3 months. I'm sitting in that locker room, and this old guy comes in, and he goes, "Oh, the young boys are here." He said something like that. And something clicked in my mind on that day, that morning, that minute.
Yeah.
There's no way I want to be doing this for another 20 or 30 years. You know what I mean? It just wasn't me. I'm nothing wrong with the job. And I went into the office that day, that minute. I knocked on Mr. Fan. Remember the name? His name was Fan. Knocked on Mr. Fan's door and said, "Mr. Fan, I got a problem. I don't want to work here anymore." And he goes, "What? I just gave you the job. You've been here 3 months. What's happened?" I said, "Look, I just don't want to do it." Went home, talked to my mom and my sister, and said, "I want to go back to college, man. I want to be something else. I don't know what it is, but I want something else out of life."
Yeah.
Went to and applied for Georgia State University, which is a big school in Atlanta, about 10 from Georgia Tech. This is we had about 36,000 students, concrete campus. And I was walking around the campus and checking out everything. And I walked through the stadium, walked through the gym. And there's a coach. The gym is on the third floor. And the coach was walking on the fourth floor, which is a track. And they had these signs on the wall, try out in 2 weeks. And the coach just yelled out, "You guys down there, make sure you come to the tryout in 2 weeks." And he was a coach from the Atlanta Hawks, Bob Reinhardt. He'd been an assistant coach of the Atlanta Hawks, and he'd taken over. And the team was dismantled, and they were trying to get a new team in there. And luckily enough, I tried out for this team. I don't know what I was thinking. Never played a game in my life. Tried out for a Division I basketball team. Now, I was athletic. Yeah. I could dunk. I had a little jump shot on me. But more importantly, I was athletic. There was one scholarship left, and it was 32 of us. And for some strange reason, I got hold of about six or seven dunks in that tryout.
Yeah.
He used to chew a cigar. He never smoked it. He always chewed on his cigar. And I remember him saying, "Young fella, come over here." And he was chewing his cigar. He said, "I thought someone said you're athletic." He was being sarcastic because I was dunking everything. Or I was trying to dunk everything. Somebody told me you could jump. And I'm thinking, you know, what do I say here? And he goes, "Be at practice tomorrow." And my life changed like that.
Yeah.
I went from not knowing what I wanted to be or who I wanted to be to being on a Division I basketball team, you know, and with a four-year scholarship. Everything paid for. My mom, I went home. My mom couldn't believe it because she was trying to get this money together to pay for my tuition and books and school.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, now I got a four-year scholarship.
Yeah.
And I'm playing on a Division I team. So.
Yeah. That's what. I mean, that's pretty crazy that if you think back, if you hadn't made that decision on that day at that job to walk into that office, who knows?
That's right.
Who knows what would happen?
And you know what's funny? I went back home last year for the first time in a long time, my 40th year anniversary from high school. And the guy who got me the job there, who's a friend of mine who graduated with me, is still working there. So, I mean, he's a manager. He's a big boss.
Yeah.
But he's been there for 40 years, 40 plus years.
Yeah.
40 years. And he loves it. You know, he runs the show. But I probably would have been right beside him somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, very different. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. So you went to Georgia State for 4 years. And then I guess it's NBA, it's draft, it's summer league, it's all that sort of stuff. Now you and you did play in the NBA. I think maybe for Philly.
And, I played a year for Philly and a half a year for the LA Clippers.
For yes. the Clippers, yeah. Yep. And that was sort of in the sort of the very early 90s. So
89,
so
sort of 90. Yes, 89, 90, yeah. yes. And what happened there was, like, I didn't play my first year of college basketball, and I sat on that bench. My second yep. year, I got a little time. My third and fourth year, I excelled. I really got better. The summer okay. was all about playing and getting better and getting better. And my senior year, I was leading the team in scoring. I averaged about 15 points a game in Division yep. One. And a couple of the scouts come in to see us play, and I had a Lakers scout come in, and he goes, "You remind me of Cooper from the Lakers. You're long, you're wiry, you play good defense, you know, you're athletic." He goes, "We'll invite you into a summer league, you know, summer league." And I'm thinking, wow, and I get invited to the Lakers summer league. But for this strange reason, some strange reason, the Lakers used to bring in 12 guys or 14 or 15 guys every year, and every team would bring in that amount. Yeah. But this year, the Lakers decided to bring in two summer league teams. So now okay. I got to battle 30 guys to try yeah. to make this roster. The roster was Magic Johnson, Worthy, and, you know, all those, Michael Cooper, and all those guys were on the team. So
yeah.
I get to the summer league, and I'm playing with the Lakers, and the first team plays, and they get blown out. And the second team, we play the next night, and David Robinson, which just come out of the academy,
yeah,
was playing, okay? So this is his first time playing. So everyone, the stadium was packed. Loyola Marymount, it was packed. Everyone wanted to see Dave Robinson play. He was the admiral coming out of the academy. Let's see yeah. what he brings to, you know, to the NBA. When I got a chance to play against him, and all of a sudden, everything clicked for me again. Every yeah. shot I took went in. I had 32 points. You know, I'm dunking the ball. And so these fans are sitting up there cheering for the Lakers because it's in L.A. Yeah. Dave Robinson is doing his thing. And so I played that one game. And by the way, they tell you to pack for 30 days. You know, their summer league is 30 days. So yeah. I got these two big suitcases full of clothes, not knowing I've never been to L.A. You know, I've never been to L.A. I've been to L.A. once, but I got these two suitcases full of clothes, and I'm there. And what happened was I play in that first game and have 32 points. Well, the next night, rather than them playing – the team won again. They mixed the team up. So I got a chance to play two games in a row.
Yeah.
On that same court, that same gym. I'm feeling it. I'm feeling confident. We were playing the Philadelphia 76ers the next night. And I gave them 30 plus points. I done 35, 36 points, just shooting the lights out. It was one of those. I got into a zone. Everything went down. And the owner of the Philadelphia 76ers and the coach were sitting in the stands watching. And I'm in the shower after the game, thinking, well, I played well. I don't know what's going to yeah. happen here. I get a knock on the door. "Copeland, someone wants to see you." Put a towel on, get to the door. It's the owner of the Philadelphia, Harold Katz, yeah. and Jimmy Lynam, the owner and the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. And they say, "Look, we just lost David Wingate, who's playing for Philadelphia. You remind us," and I'm reminding them of everybody. "But Cooper, David Wingate, you remind us of David Wingate. We'd love to invite you to our veterans camp." So I have no idea about what's going on. I don't have an agent. Yeah. I don't know how the whole thing works. I'm just there to play basketball, right? I didn't know the ins and outs. And I said, "Well, I'm with the Lakers. I don't know what to do here." And he said, "Well, talk to your agent." So I get on the phone and call my coach from Georgia State, my college coach, yeah. and say, "Coach, I got these two teams fighting over me." He goes, "What's happened?" There was no internet back then. So they yeah, yeah. There was yeah. no Lenard Copeland doing this. He said, "What do you mean?" He goes, I said, "Coach, the Lakers want me." The Lakers had offered me a partial contract to come to veterans camp. Philadelphia went and offered me the full contract. Said, "We'll pay you. If you get cut tomorrow, yeah. you're still going to get your money."
Yeah.
The coach said, "Copeland, something's wrong with you. They don't do that kind of stuff. It doesn't happen that quick. You've only been there 3 days." He goes, "Let me call somebody." He rings me back in 10 minutes. He goes, "Whatever the hell you've done, whatever you've done, well done, because you got two teams fighting over you. The Lakers yeah. want to give you a partial. Philadelphia want to give you the full contract. I advise you to take the full contract, but I'm going to send you to one of my friends there who's an agent.
Yeah.
An agent knocked on my door 15 minutes later in the hotel room. We sit down. Philadelphia come in 20 minutes later. I signed the contract with Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Harold Katz comes to my room. He gives me $700-$800. He goes, go home, have a steak. I'll see you in about a month. Come to Veterans Camp. And that's how it all started with me.
Yeah, wow.
I was there for 3 days. I was there for 4 days. 4 days max.
Yeah.
So
you didn't need your 30 days worth of
luggage. I didn't need my 30 days.
No, obviously. So, yeah, look, a bit of a whirlwind. I mean, certainly sound. And as you said, no internet back then. So
nothing.
No video. I'm assuming there's no video of those games.
Boy, I wish I could find them. I really do. I'm sure they probably erased all those games and gone over, because there's that many games going on every year in the summer league. You know, now they would probably store them somewhere, but back then they were VHS tapes. So who knows where they are? You know what I mean? So, but then luckily, I did get a chance to play in Philadelphia for a year. I stayed there for the whole year and got a chance to get my, you know, learn some of those guys and learn the profession and learn the training. But then they released me to sign Manute Bol. They released me and Scotty Brooks because they needed our contract to sign Manute Bol.
Okay.
So once I left Philadelphia, I'm stuck again. What do I do? Tried out with the Atlanta Hawks because I was back home for the summer.
Yeah.
Didn't really do well there, but then went and had another tryout with the Clippers. It was something about LA, and just had a phenomenal tryout again. Made that team. Ron Harper, you know, Gary Grant. We had some talent. Doc Rivers was on that team. We had some players on that team, and I made that team. And right, I had a massive dunk over Grandmama Larry Johnson in this game. Come down on my knee, sprained my knee. They put me on IR, injury reserve, but the Clippers at that time had about 10 guys on injury reserve, so they had to let some people go, and they released me, and I went to the Philippines, and then from the Philippines, I came to Australia.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the next step, and that's what, I mean, a lot of people, myself included, remember you for the NBL, because that you were here playing for, I want to say, 12, 13 years. Majority of that with Melbourne and alongside Andrew Gaze, and you guys won a couple of titles, and you've since been inducted, I think, was it 2019? Yeah, Hall of Fame?
Yes, 18, 19,
Yeah, so for me, that like, and we remember as a kid, the dunks, that was sort of what we remember you for, the high-flying dunks and you and Gaze sort of teaming up and basically tearing other teams apart. But you, like I guess if we look at the transition or the progression of the game to where we see it now with more floor spacing and a lot more three-point shots, that sort of thing, you hit a lot of three-pointers. Like, it wasn't just dunking that throughout your career, that there were, you were able to score from a range of areas on the floor. And I think that's probably not talked about. Well, for me, it wouldn't be talked about as much. It's just the diversity in your offensive game. But coming to Australia and playing for Melbourne and sort of having success there, what was that? Like, what was it that sort of, I guess, kept you here in Australia as opposed, like, were you ever of the opinion where, hey, I'm playing really well, we're succeeding, do I try the NBA again? Was that ever sort of in the back of your mind, or you were just happy here in Australia?
Well, I thought about it. You know, when I got here, I was 26.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'd been around, played in the CBA over there a couple of times and went to the Philippines, like I said. But again, you got to understand, this happened so fast. I went to college. I'm on a college team, but I didn't get a chance to play. I never really got a chance to play. I didn't play high school basketball. Went to college, I sat for 2 years. So I got 2 years of college basketball in me. When I got to the NBA, I didn't play. I was on the end of that bench. Yeah. So I'm hungry to get up and down that court. I'm hungry to put the ball in the hole. I know I'm getting there and it's coming. And then every time I get there, something happens. So when I got to Australia and we're playing at Rod Laver, 15,000 people. I'm playing and we're winning. Yeah. You know, my first year we got to the grand final and lost. And then you got a guy who's leading the league in scoring, and he becomes friends with him, and you know the partnership's working. You know what I mean? It's hard yeah. to. We both wanted to score. I mean, me and Andrew are two of the most competitive guys in the world. Yeah. He's getting 30 plus points. I'm trying to get 30 points. You know, he scores six threes. I want six threes. Yeah. But you know, we were competitive. But it was helping us win because now you got to guard two guys you got to guard rather than just the one guy. And, you know, once we got to that championship that first year, and I'm playing, and I said, wait, this is your beautiful country. They treated you nicely. I'm 26. By the time I go back to the NBA, am I going to play or am I going to sit?
Yeah.
And it wasn't about the money for me because, again, it was about me playing and finding this new toy that I had, which is me being athletic and doing my thing. And I got to the and then the second year we won the championship. So I've been here 2 years and we've gone to two championships. We went to four championships in 5 years. So it's hard to make a move after you've been so successful. All of a sudden now you're walking down the street and everyone knows who you are. You know, we're on channel 10, which is there's no free to air. This is the real deal. Like people know who you are. You know, I can go to camera and somebody's gonna know me. I can go to Perth, someone's gonna know you. So along with the camaraderie, the fame, I was doing something I loved to do, and it was working. It was working for me. So that's what kept me sort of there. I ended up meeting my ex-wife, and we moved in together. So it became a beautiful place. I mean, it was far away from home. Yeah. My family didn't get a real chance to see me play, but they heard the stories, and you know, it was fun, man. It was a fun ride.
Yeah, and then, so like I said, you're with Melbourne for a significant portion of your career here, and then you sort of moved around a little bit. I think you played for Brisbane, Adelaide?
Brisbane one year and finished my career with 2 years in Adelaide. Andrew and Lindsay retired. Yeah. The year we all pulled out, we all left. Me and Mike Brackey left. And it was time. It was time for Al Westover to take over, you know, with a new bunch of guys. And they were very successful. But I just wasn't ready to give it up. I mean, Andrew started when he was 5 years old. So his legs were, his wear and tear were probably done. Mark Brackey wasn't ready to give it up. So I got a chance to go to Brisbane. And Brisbane was an experience that I needed to see because I was under Joey. Joey Wright was a coach, and he was a magnificent coach. But I was turning 40. And Joey had a bunch of young guys, so he had to coach the way he coached, which was get it and go and two-a-day trainings and sometimes three-a-day trainings. And I just didn't have it in my body to do that kind of training.
Yeah,
I stayed that 1 year and then went to Adelaide, and Phil Smythe was an old-school coach where he goes, I don't need it in training. I need it on the weekends when you're playing. So Monday through Thursday, I rode a bike or a shot free throw. And then on Friday, Saturday, I got my jump shot working. And so that worked for us the last couple of years. And you know, once I retired, you know, things looked, I started trying to coach a little bit here and there, and other things opened up for me.
Yeah. So I know you did a little bit of coaching and you and Andrew coached together in Sydney for a period of time there. And then Andrew has transitioned into media and you've been on the jump with him and Kane. So I guess if we look at what life is now, like for you now, and how you're involved in basketball, what is it that you're doing regularly?
Well, I do a morning academy for myself. I was working with other people, but I sort of just train kids in the mornings before school, three days a week. And then sort of a school holiday camp that's been very successful. About 200 kids every school holidays for 2 days. I remember back in the day when we were doing 5-day camps, and I joke about this all the time. There's no way in hell I could do a 5-day camp now, you know, because you lose your voice, you know, being around that many kids. But the camp's been very successful. I've been doing it for probably 3 or 4 years. Bit of coaching here and there. But then that's when the jump, Andrew started doing the jump, and that sort of opened up some doors for me. You know, he wanted me to come on because we do a song and dance sort of. Whenever we do interviews, it's always him bagging me or me bagging him, and we got a sort of a great relationship with that, and it works for us. And once I got on the jump was pretty good. It's just the timing was off because the show was on a Tuesday afternoon or something, which probably didn't work and it's still probably not working as well as it should. But then got a chance to meet Kane and work with Kane and did a Kane and Cope show. And then the NBA, I'm going to start doing the NBL. And now I'm just doing commentary for the NBL. And we're looking at doing a pod down the line. I think me and Andrew, we're going to try to revamp our podcast. We had a podcast during COVID called the Alley-Oop podcast. It was very successful because we got some big names on there. And during COVID, everyone's stuck in the house. So we were just trying to entertain people and talk about old school basketball. So it worked for us. And I think we're going to try to get it back going pretty soon here.
I think it would certainly – I think podcasts are just going to the next level. So lots of people are listening to them and branching out. So I think that'd be great. And I guess finally, just before I let you jump out, I know you're busy. The NBL, I guess if you think about it, when you were playing in the 90s and early 2000s, was sort of before, I guess here in Australia, we were obviously very fully aware of the NBA and what it was. But in terms of being able to watch the NBA, it was pretty limited back then.
Yeah.
It was maybe one or two games a week. So the NBL was sort of, everyone just watched the NBL and went to NBL games. And then as we got the internet, as we touched on before, moved into the world of the internet and NBA League Pass and being able to watch ESPN, a lot of people just transitioned over and watched the NBA. And I think the NBL sort of hit a bit of a rough spot there for a few years. But I feel like it's really bounced back in the last 3 years, 4 years. I know myself, I'm watching as many games a week as I can. And the fact that we've got so many Australians in the NBA now, it's a very global game. So I guess just, do you think where the NBL is, are they in a good position now and is the trajectory what it needs to be?
Look, you're right. The early 90s were fantastic. But the early 90s had a lot to do with the way we played.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan was a big focus. Everybody in the world knew Michael Jordan. So Michael Jordan retired. It sort of took a hit. The NBA took a hit. Basketball in general took a hit. The NBL certainly took a hit. We were fighting, trying to get on local television, and we were on ABC at one stage, and we were on all these different channels. And look, Larry Kesselman came in, and he had a vision. And no one knew what his vision it was. I mean, they pulled the Tigers. You know, I was disgruntled about it. The Andrew, all these guys were disgruntled about it, but no one knew what his vision was. But his vision was gold. I mean, his vision was to get the league back to where it is, and even better, to add some quality teams and to stop all these owners coming in for 2 or 3 years and then selling their team or falling out of the league, which was hurting the league in general. But look, as far as the league right now, it's in a magnificent place. I mean, I would love to see a couple more teams, and I'm hearing that one or two are coming in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
2 or 3 teams, because when I got here, there were 14 teams. And it was healthy. Two or three more teams at the rate that we're going right now. And like you said, to have that many NBA Australian guys playing in the NBA is unheard of. This country has 25, 26 million people. But to have 10, 11, 12 guys in the NBA is unheard of. And that just says whatever's happening over here, we're doing the right thing as far as basketball because we're developing these young kids into superstars. I mean, for you to get that many, again, to get that many guys going over playing basketball, and the game is so healthy at a grassroots level, you can't get a stadium in Victoria, nowhere. I coach kids in the mornings, hence the reason why I do it before school. Because after 3 o'clock, you can forget about getting a stadium trying to train some kids, or it's not going to happen. So that tells you, again, it's very healthy and it's on the right trajectory. And I think, and give it a couple of years, 2, 3 years, you just never know. And it's at that level where people are comparing it to the second best league in the world. Obviously, the NBA is the best, but to have this many guys floating, you know, I look at Paris now because I see a lot of bigger 7 foot, 7'1", 7'2" guys out of Paris. Now, the world has caught up to the NBA.
Yeah.
By far, the world has caught up. And you look at the NBA and MVPs, the last five MVPs were all international players.
Yep.
So, again, it's a good thing. I mean, you know, in the NBA, you used to walk around with your chest out like we're the best in the world.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to say that now. I mean, there's certainly we love the game over there, but international basketball has caught up and guys are playing all over the world, and that's a good thing for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, look at the results. US don't dominate anymore in the on the world stage, and the Olympics are going to be an example of that. And just the fact that they've stacked their team with almost gone in that dream team sort of pathway where they've just got bought back everyone.
They had to, Kenny. Yeah. They had to. Because if you don't, you got to understand something. If you go back over, if you don't take gold home with you, then you're ostracized. I mean, you know, so you got to stack that thing now where there's no doubt in your mind. Even now, I'm calling it now, even now that they're stacked now, that gold is not promised, man. You got to go in there and play hard because teams are coming at you every night.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Slovenia didn't even make it. Luka Doncic, arguably the best player in the world, is not even there because the standard. So, I think basketball is in a really good spot, and the NBL specifically, and we've got a lot of, as you said, Aussies who were transitioning over into the NBA, but a lot of players from America and globally, like Alex Saar, who are coming to the NBL to play and develop their game here because we're seen as an elite world-class competition. So, I really like where the NBL is at the moment. And thanks for coming on today. I've already taken up more of your time than was allocated. So I'm gonna let you.
But what about Canberra? Any hope for Canberra in the next couple of years, or what's the deal there?
We hope they just revamped the AIS Arena. So where the Cannons used to play, they just spent $15 million. Upgrading that retractable seating, new court. So the Canberra Capitals, so our WNBL team, are going to play there next season. For me, my brother, all of the guys I grew up with, we would love for the Cannons to come back. And I can, I mean, I'm not in a position where I could 100% guarantee it, but given the interest in basketball at the moment, and if you go to, much like in Victoria, if you go to any stadium after school, any day of the week or on a weekend, it's packed with kids, and you cannot hire a court to play on. We're pretty limited here in terms of what's available anyway, but interest in basketball has gone through the roof. Like we have so many grades, so many levels, people playing masters, kids starting when they're 5 and 6. So I would love for the Cannons to come back, and I would certainly make an effort to get it if they had a season pass or something. Like it would just be great, I think, for the community and for basketball here in general. So fingers crossed. There's rumors, but nothing sort of guaranteed yet. So we are hoping, but only time will tell. Thanks again for coming on. I'll let you jump out and I'll jump out as well. Remember, anyone that is watching along, subscribe and like, do all of that stuff for us, helps us grow. Leonard, very surreal having you on here. You were someone that I watched growing up, and one of the reasons watching Melbourne was one of the reasons I really got into basketball. So really nice moment for me. So thanks for coming on good luck with all of the media stuff that you're doing and your basketball camps, doing a lot of work for young kids.
Kenny, it's been an absolute pleasure being on the show, and good luck with everything going on. If you need me again, give me a call. Let's stay in touch. And hopefully if Canberra comes back, I'll be up there one day to see you.
Yeah. Look, I'll hold you to that. So, thanks for coming on. We'll check out now for anyone. As I said, subscribe, follow us. I'll be doing lots more of these interviews. That will do for today's show. Until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.